dictatorship. Have you ever analyzed the real meaning of dictatorship? Only by so doing can the false sense of the word be recognized. That is to say, the reason for the attempt to govern and dictate to men, regardless of their own desires. The Christian Scientist, the metaphysician, knows that the oneness and allness of divine mind is accompanied in belief by the negation of that oneness and allness. Just as Jesus expressed all power as the showing forth of God, divine mind, so the mortal, as the showing forth of the negation of divine mind, malicious mind, would likewise claim in belief all power. The negative of divine mind must claim to the minutest detail every function, power, and authority of the positive, for that is the nature of the suppositional opposite. Remember, however, it is only as the negative is taken back to the positive that it really does have power. All electric power is the result of the negative being brought in contact with the positive, and that contact is seen as the power, light, and heat that you use. This illustration should be helpful to the Christian Scientist by showing him that to attain enlightenment on any subject, he has only to take the negative back to the positive, in other words, to translate matter back to mind. By so doing, he finds mind embracing within itself all being and all effect, and instantly there is light, power, and freedom. Applying this to dictatorship is not God as the one and only mind, self-evidently the one controlling power, and consequently the one dictator. It is necessary to understand this fact and not to attempt to destroy dictator, but to gain such a true sense of dictator that God is seen everywhere as dictating. This understanding will destroy the power of malicious mind to substitute itself as the mental volition of anyone, and thus compel its victim to act contrary to wisdom and good. The understanding that there is no malicious mind to operate as a malicious mental malpractitioner lifts the nightmare of mesmerism and frees the victim from false dictatorship. The worst and most vicious form of dictatorship is the despotism of malicious mental malpractice. Annihilate the belief that malicious mind has any avenues or channels through which to operate, any man, woman, or child upon whom to foist its beliefs of law, any malicious mental malpractice or malicious mental malpractitioner to declare its dictatorial demands or to carry them out. How is this done? By knowing that God, being the one and only mind, his man, woman, and child is the only man, woman, and child, his law is the only law, and that God's man is ever about God's business. This realization leaves God as the one and only dictator. If malicious mind is admitted, it follows that as mind, either good or bad, it must have avenues and channels, men, women, and children through whom it can act and devolve power to act. Hence, it is necessary to know that there is no malicious mind. This understanding destroys all false sense of dictatorship. It is futile to imagine that false dictatorship will vanish until this is done. The European situation is simply the outward expression in the various phases of materiality of what Christian Science in its advancing unfoldment has brought to light, namely, that malicious mind, through suggestion, acts in its last iniquity as malicious minds and directs evil in all its deviltry of killing and destroying the finer sentiments of being, so as finally to destroy both soul and body in hell, as Jesus indicated. Right knowing, and nothing but right knowing, can stop the carnage. You alone are responsible for what is taking place in your world. It is not something over there, but consciousness right here. You have full power and authority to think and act rightly. You, as the activity of God, divine mind, must understand your world in its true sense. In so doing, remember you are compelling malicious mind to cease its suggestions, which is all that is declaring this turmoil, misery, and death. However, you must recognize that while it is all hypnotic suggestion, nevertheless, just designating it as hypnotism does not change its effect. That simply places it where you can cope with it and refute its destructive madness. Diagnosing a case is one step. Applying the remedy is the next and more important step. It is in the application that the correctness of the diagnosis is rewarded by the disappearance of the evil. You cannot escape, and you do not wish to escape, your responsibility to judge righteous judgment. Mrs. Eddy urged in Pulpit and Press to know then that you possess sovereign power to think and act rightly, and that nothing can dispossess you of this heritage and trespass on love. If you maintain this position, who or what can cause you to sin or suffer? Our surety is our confidence that we are indeed dwellers in truth and love, man's eternal mansion. The duty of the Christian Scientist is to hold crime in check. One on God's side is a majority. The Christian Scientist does not interfere with mind, but he certainly does interfere with malicious mental malpractice and its operation. He definitely will not tolerate any discordant condition in world affairs any more than sickness or storms or other untoward circumstances. He is determined to be about his Father's business, the destruction of everything unlike good. If the Christian Scientist is not conscious of his power, how can he exercise it and bring good to light? The reason the Christian Scientist must be successful in his endeavor to conquer sin, disease, death, and all limitations is that he is absolutely sure they are not of God. He therefore attacks them with full power and authority, because he knows mesmerism is all that is at work there, and that it is the basis of every erroneous appearance. He refuses to tolerate any false sense of control, whether called dictatorship or totalitarianism or any other subversive ism, and he promptly destroys them by recognizing all such influence as malicious mental malpractice. Thus the command voiced by the prophet Isaiah is fulfilled, to loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free, and that she break every yoke. The Christian Scientist detects the evil which masquerades as good back of the false concept of dictatorship. He never loses sight of the ruthless endeavors of malicious mind to dominate. God's way of imparting good is the exact reverse of domination. It is always by way of reflection. For what things soever he doeth, these also doeth the Son likewise. For the Father loveth the Son, and showeth him all things that himself doeth. Mrs. Eddy, in her first edition of Science and Health, has exposed the nature of the dictatorial attitude of mortal mind, which, in the days to come, when leaving a matter basis, would operate as pure evil mind. This warning was given 65 years ago. In coming years, the person or mind that hates his neighbor will have no need to traverse his fields to destroy his flocks and herds and spoil his vines, or to enter his house to demoralize his household, for the evil mind will do this through mesmerism and not in propria persona be seen committing the deed. Unless this terrible hour be met and restrained by science, mesmerism, that scourge of man, will leave nothing sacred when mind begins to act under direction of conscious power. sensuous man makes war to the death on his enemies, but the spiritual pours blessings on them unseen and unacknowledged, like the chamomile that crushed yields the sweetest odor. Spiritual minds emit an atmosphere of truth that blesses their enemies and destroys error while it is persecuting them. But stir the evil sensual mind, and worse than the deadly upas are the plagues it emits. Why the persecution of the Jew? In considering this subject, it must be distinctly understood that the term Jew is really a misnomer. It is not the Jew as a person that is meant, it is Judaism. Judaism stands as the cause, and what is called the Jew is merely the effect. It is in this sense, and in this sense alone, that the word Jew is used in this article, and in its place Judaism should be substituted, for only by so doing can the impersonal nature of the subject be understood and a right attitude be gained. When the metaphysician speaks of country, race, or people, whether called Germany or Jew or Israelites or any other, he is not talking about personality. He is considering states of mind or arguments. All that he is cognizant of is an argument being presented. No one would even know that there was any Europe or Germany or Jew unless it came as consciousness to him and came as his own consciousness, as his mind, in the form of an argument. As Christian Scientists, you acknowledge this. Human thought at this time is tremendously stirred, and there is a deep desire to understand this problem of the Jews. Why should the Jews be selected for such barbarous persecution as is taking place in many countries today? No persecution is really barbarous because every circumstance or experience is really the pressure of truth forcing the victim higher, and the pressure continues only so long as there is something to press, something resisting. Mrs. Eddy presents this very forcibly in her message for 1901. In Christian Science, it is plain that God removes the punishment for sin only as the sin is removed, never punishes it only as it is destroyed, and never afterwards. Hence, the hope of universal salvation. It makes no difference what the experience. It is the pressure of truth to force you to higher levels of understanding. But the present question perplexing people is, why the world rebellion against the Jew? A brief analysis of what is called Bible history may clear up the matter. Abraham stood as the light of the world. He obeyed the voice of God, going out from his father's house, matter, into a land that he knew not of, mind. And so he won the promise, "In thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed." Now Abraham, from the finite viewpoint, seemed to show forth two mental qualities or characteristics, the one material and the other spiritual, or as Paul puts it, thoughts the meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another. With this light of the world called Abraham, there finally seemed to come what might be called a distinct cleavage. In due time, what seemed the material and the spiritual phases of Abraham were expressed by two kingdoms. The kingdom of Judah seemed to take the material course, and the kingdom of Israel, the spiritual. This, of course, was all in the domain of thought, and indeed is present at this moment, operating as consciousness with each individual. The kingdom of Judah was represented by the tribe of Judah, of which the Jew is the direct descendant, together with a portion of the tribe of Benjamin. The kingdom of Israel was represented by the 10 tribes, later called the lost tribes or lost sheep of the house of Israel. According to prophecy, these latter tribes were to be gathered in the isles afar off and to be known by a new name. Thence The branch was to grow over the wall and extend to the ends of the earth, whence Shiloh, the final revelation of truth, was to come. All this seemingly has been fulfilled to the letter. The 10 tribes, or house of Israel, were gathered in the British Isles. Their new name was Anglo-Saxons, or Isaacsons, sons of Isaac. Ephraim, the younger, was the branch that grew over the wall and took root in America. From America has come Shiloh, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. In other words, science and health, the comforter, which Jesus said would lead unto all truth. Judah, the Jew, and Israel, Anglo-Saxondom, in the broad sense, are brethren, and the Christian Scientist understands this. Israel was divided into the two kingdoms of Judah and Israel under Rehoboam, son of Solomon, and the Bible narrative clearly maintains the distinction between these two kingdoms and between the promises which were made concerning each in all later prophecies. Judah, with its brilliant materialism, expressed from the beginning the material phase of Abraham. Anything of Abraham must be brilliant, whether it be material or spiritual. This material brilliancy, represented by Judah, has been the envy of many mortals, inciting their jealousy and resentment. Jesus came of the royal line of David, who was of the tribe of Judah. Jesus was the highest human concept, the way-shower or exemplar, but he was not the full consummation of the Savior. He represented the personal, and personality is a phase of materiality which must disappear before the impersonal or mind sense of the Savior can appear in its fullness. Knowing this, Jesus said, "It is expedient for you that I go away, for if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you, but if I depart, I will send him unto you." The Spirit of Truth was to come as Jacob originally foresaw, through Israel, not through Judah, as Shiloh, impersonality, not personality. It came first as America, and then as science and health. But Judah to this day has held tenaciously to its brilliant materiality. It has been a leader in the material world and succeeded on material lines, but has never been able to compete with or conquer spiritual Israel, because spirituality is always more advanced, hence more powerful, than materiality. Spiritual Israel cannot be conquered. That is the reason Anglo-Saxondom, representing Israel, entertains no fear of nor hatred for the Jew. It cannot, for Abraham, fidelity, faith in the divine life and in the eternal principle of being, as science and health defines Abraham, is the father of both their common heritage. Discrediting Judah, which represents the other branch of Abraham, which will finally be united with Israel in the New Jerusalem of understanding, is abnormal and the result of malicious mind. Brilliant materialism and brilliant spirituality go hand in hand until finally materialism is translated back to mind. The transient, false sense of matter as something to be accumulated will eventually be uncovered, and matter as such will no longer be desired. As already seen, the one thing that is not afraid of Judah with all its material ability is spirituality. All others who themselves trust to material sense are afraid as well as jealous of the Jew, afraid that his genius for materiality will appropriate everything. You ask why the Jew should be persecuted for profiting in materiality? The answer is, the Jew is bringing this persecution upon himself, but not on account of his possession of material things, which he, like all other mortals, is entitled to if he earns them. Material wealth is not, after all, a thing. It is a state of mind. Why should we not wish Godspeed unto all in gaining wealth? You would limit no one in attaining the multiplication table because you are not afraid that someone else's having it would deprive you of it. But the difficulty with the Jew is all within himself. He refuses to listen to that inward voice of spirit, which is always present with him because he is of the seed of Abraham. Instead, he has become absorbed in the one purpose of gaining material prosperity to the neglect of spiritual growth. When Judah decides that he has had enough of materiality and puts forth sincere effort to cultivate his innate spiritual sense, then the persecution will cease because there is no further purpose in it. As Mrs. Eddy says in Miscellany, when these things cease to bless, they will cease to occur. If you think the Jewish persecution has anything to do with Germans or Italians or any other race as persons, you are denying the allness of the one mind, the one infinite person. When you receive punishment, it is because you have let in the foe. You have listened to the directed malicious arguments of limitation that would rob you of health, wealth, and happiness. Do not think you can escape meeting these insidious arguments coming as your ego, your I, any more than Judah can escape refuting eventually the suggestions that now make him say, I will not listen to the voice of Spirit. It is the unwillingness of Judah to let spirituality, his heritage from Abraham, govern, that is the cause of all his troubles. The same malicious animal magnetism that caused the Jews to persecute and crucify Jesus is now causing, and for centuries has caused, the Germans and others to persecute him. It was not the Jew who originated the deviltry loosed upon Jesus, and it is not persons or races who are responsible for like deviltry today. All are victims of malicious mind, the great dragon called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. This thought is elucidated in Science and Health in the statement, it is the animal instinct in mortals which would impel them to devour each other and cast out devils through Beelzebub. And again, the author is convinced that the accusations against Jesus of Nazareth and even his crucifixion were instigated by the criminal instinct here described. During the World War, when Germany seemed to be trying to destroy the English language, the clothing of Science and Health, the young child, you understood that it was not Germany, but the activity of malicious evil. Neither Hitler, Stalin, Mussolini, nor any other person is responsible for the confusion of the world today. Take the entire condition of world affairs back to God and uncover the arguments of reversal as the operation of malicious malpractice, and you find the solution of the whole affair. Do this if you would destroy every mirage of evil. Jesus said, woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to that man by whom the offense cometh. This being so, cannot we leave the punishment of all sin to that divine principle that punishes only to the point of the destruction of the error? The son of perdition, the one sinner, will, as Science and Health points out, receive its full penalty, both for what it is and for what it does. If any of you have been tempted to make these questions personal, resist the suggestion vigorously and at once. Just ask yourself the question, am I too a vicious malpractitioner, or am I a Christian Scientist? Is any of it over there, or is it all here? How is the cause of Christian Science to go forward if the metaphysician allows himself to be mesmerized into dealing with person, place, or thing instead of going through to God as all in all? When you stop short of God, then do not be surprised if you experience confusion, sin, sickness, or death, for how can you be saved from it if you open the door to it? Remember, as Mrs. Eddy points out in Miscellany, animal magnetism, in its ascending steps of evil, entices its victim by unseen, silent arguments. Considering a subject like this compels the Christian Scientist to realize how dangerous it is for him to talk about what appear as personalities. The whole tendency, unless most carefully guarded against, is to mesmerize one into thinking in terms of over there or out there, and such thinking can only end in confusion. In fact, it is not really thinking at all. It is just dreaming. You know there is no Jewish race over there which is being punished in order to make it regain its spirituality as the seed of Abraham. There is nothing out there to be punished. What good would that do? Am I not the one who has to do the regaining if I believe that anything has been lost? Am I not the thief if I believe in thieving? Did not Jesus say, "And I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me"? Was not this lifting up from the earth being lifted above the mesmerism that there is something apart from one, here and now? For progress, it is essential for the Christian Scientist to be ever on guard, for malicious mental malpractice is based on personalities and an over there, instead of the eternal heavenly here, which embraces within itself the right sense of here all good. It is impossible to emphasize too strongly the great need to avoid all over there. In Christian Science, it is all here and now. If it were not here and now, you could have no cognizance of anything. You know this. Then see that you do not supply malicious mind with this chord of belief in an over there on which to play its tune of evil suggestion. Unselfed. The commonly accepted definition of unselfed, by which is meant to be unselfish, is entirely separate from and unlike the metaphysical meaning of the word. Unselfishness, as humanly interpreted, is full of personalities, and to be unselfish means to be doing for or giving to others, whereas to be unselfed in the true metaphysical or spiritual sense is the exact opposite. It has absolutely no personality attached to it. It is centered entirely on God as all in all. Every thought begins with God and flows from Him, unfolding His presentation of Himself in all the beauty, glory, and completeness of His own being. God does not give, He is, and man is His showing forth. To be unselfed means never to harbor a thought which starts from effect. To think in terms of effect is to mentally malpractice, because it is accepting something aside from God, the one cause. You have learned that you cannot mentally malpractice without doing so maliciously, for all wrong thought, being finite, has only one result, death, and death always means maliciousness, the last enemy. Then, to be unselfed means to start with cause, God, and to find Him as the basis and substance of all being. Mrs. Eddy once said, "There is only one way through, and only one, and that is to become unselfed." Impersonality and unselfishness go hand in hand, because both start with God as causation, and never with effect. Effect, in other words, what is seen, to the spiritually minded, is like the image in the mirror. Its one and only purpose is to testify to the substance of the image, the object before the mirror, the cause, and never to itself, the effect. To do this is to become unselfed, and is the only way to be impersonally and spiritually minded. For Satan finds some mischief still for idle hands to do. Watts. No statement could be truer than that the devil, malicious mental malpractice, always finds work for idle hands, idle minds to do. The Christian Scientist must think seriously about this question. If he is not constantly active on the side of truth, he can rest assured that malicious mental malpractice is right at his door. That is the danger of an attitude of thought like, "Let God do it." It is a waiting attitude, an endeavor to make one's thought a blank, and Jesus warned of the danger of this, for he said, "When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places, seeking rest, and finding none, then he saith, I will return unto my house from whence I came out. And when he is come, he findeth it empty, swept, and garnished. Then goeth he, and taketh with himself seven other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter in and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first." Why is it worse? Because the poor victim thought he had thoroughly cleaned his house, and lo and behold, Satan is again dwelling therein. Such disappointment cannot come to you if thoroughly cleaning your house means replacing every erroneous sense with the true sense, so completely filling it that Satan, evil suggestion, can find no sanctuary there. Mrs. Eddy declares in Miscellany, "There is no door through which evil can enter, and no space for evil to fill in a mind filled with goodness. Good thoughts are an impervious armor. Clad therewith, you are completely shielded from the attacks of error of every sort." Christian Scientists must never be careless about replacing the wrong sense that is cast out with the right sense, so that evil will find no door unbarred and no vacant room to occupy. They must not take the attitude of crying, "Peace, peace," when there is no peace. Peace can be won and maintained only when we have fought the holy war and have put up such a fight that evil is cast out forever, seen in its true sense. Who does not yearn for peace? But today it is the coward under evil's direction who calls for peace. The battle for truth has not yet been won. Only malicious mental malpractice would say it has, in order to encourage you to stop the warfare. Never forget that the sword cannot be put up until it has first been drawn. Christian Scientists are soldiers of the cross, and they must fight until victory is theirs. Evil is ever urging us to cease fighting and let God do it. God cannot do more than he has already done. He has done all. It is the work of the Christian Scientist to prove that, to show that forth. If evil can persuade you, the Christian Scientist, to relax, it will have accomplished its purpose. It will then, after all your years of work and faithfulness, when you think that you are at the point of enjoying the reward of your labors with your house nicely cleaned, enter in and rob you of the fruits of your effort. It does this because you have listened to the voice of the charmer, admonishing you not to be so vigorous in your denunciation of malicious animal magnetism, because God is love, and love does everything and cares for everyone. True enough, but has not God always been love, and has he not always taken the same tender care of all his creation? How can he be about to do something that he has not already done? Then it is our work to begin vigorously to prove that God is love, and that he is proving his care by making his children active and alert. We have work to do ourselves. We cannot expect God to do our work. He cannot hear that kind of prayer. He hears only the prayer of being active about his business. As Mrs. Eddy says in Miscellaneous Writings, be active, and, however slow, thy success is sure. Toil is triumph. If you succeed in making your mind a blank, thinking that by thus doing you can place yourself in a listening attitude to hear God's voice, you have let the bars down and opened your house for the devil's entrance. That idle, listless mood is exactly the opportunity evil desires, and Satan will quickly find something to fill idle minds. Keep active, and no matter how slow your progress may seem to be, success in the end is assured. Guard against a negative watch that would lull you to sleep, that would make you believe a listless peace is lasting peace. Today, the only peace is the sword of truth. One who was Mrs. Eddy's secretary for several years told me on two or three occasions of Mrs. Eddy's distress, almost despair even, at times when she thought of what would become of the Christian Scientist when she was no longer here to arouse him to wakeful and vigorous activity. I can dimly see what she was thinking, that malicious mental malpractice would so beguile the Christian Scientist with a false sense of peace that he would be robbed of all his opposition to its subtle arguments, and so, little by little, darkness would take the place of light, and the world would sink back into blackness. This will inevitably take place if we become indolent and imagine that all we have to do is to listen for God's voice. We need to be the voice of God and to be about His business every instant. We cannot rest. Malicious argument is always trying to lull us to sleep. To be on guard continually is our only protection. As Longfellow's Psalm of Life states it, let us then be up and doing with a heart for any fate, still achieving, still pursuing, learn to labor and to wait. The waiting is while you are laboring, not while you are inactive. And is it not also exactly what Christ Jesus meant in his revelation to John when he declared, after he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour? Is not this silence the active silencing of all evil suggestion through the realization of God's eternal allness? Cast out the siren of indolent peace and demand that your peace be a conscious, ever-active peace, the understanding of what peace really is. To be deceived with a ghastly pretense of peace is but the effect of the poisonous, soporific fumes of malicious suggestion. Mrs. Eddy declares in Miscellaneous Writings, mental darkness is senseless error, neither intelligence nor power, and its victim is responsible for its supposititious presence. As genuine Christian Scientists, followers of one leader, let us not be deceived by subtle platitudes clothed in words of gentleness and peace, which are so alluring as to endanger the unsuspecting. Some of the most beautiful plants and flowers are the most deadly. Today, there is no excuse for ignorance or idleness. If at present satisfied with wrongdoing, we must learn to loathe it. If at present content with idleness, we must become dissatisfied with it, as science and health declares. The law of reversal. There is only one law of reversal, God's law, the law that by virtue of its own infinite goodness is the spontaneous destruction or reversal of everything unlike good. Mesmerism operates to make the Christian Scientist, when he uses the term law of reversal, immediately associate it with evil. If he does this, he is incapable of understanding this law. However, No claim of law is nearer to the heart of evil, or is more necessary in belief for its maintenance than the perverted sense of the law of reversal, which is evil's very being. The human mind, through being the negation or suppositional opposite of the divine mind, is the reverse of all that divine mind is. Therefore, the law of reversal operates as the supposed law of the action of the human mind. As progress is the law of God, so reversal is the action of evil. Then, it is not strange to find the perverted sense of the law of reversal confronting the Christian Scientist at every forward step. In the final manifestation of evil, Satan, standing in the holy place as pure malicious argument, as shown forth in malicious mental malpractice, the malpracticianer voicing Satan is found using, by perversion, the law of reversal consistently in defending his own wickedness. By the fraudulent use of the law of reversal, evil automatically endeavors to reverse the thought put forward by the Christian Scientist in denying evil. It changes this into an affirmation for evil. By so doing, it seeks to nullify the truthful statements which deny presence or power to evil, and, if not guarded against, it may seem to succeed in accomplishing its purpose. But if the scientist heeds Jesus' statement, "A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another," the whole process changes. Confronted with love and the statement that right where the evil seems to be, there is the very presence of love and the infinite power of truth, malpractice must follow its own self-made law that the reverse of your statements is true, and reversed, love becomes hatred and destruction and the law of torment to the evil itself. Thus, the victory is won. Then, is not the remedy for every vicious argument of evil love? The greater the love, the more destructive it becomes to the claims of evil, verifying Mrs. Eddy's statement in mental practice in miscellaneous writings. Thus, a mental malpractitioner may lose his power to harm by a false mental argument. Another point that the Christian Scientist must understand is that this law of reversal is used by evil continually to reverse all the Christian Scientist's earnest efforts to accomplish good. This belief of law must be defeated by knowing that God's law of reversal is the only law of reversal and is ever operative for good, reversing every erroneous effort and belief. If this is not understood, your work may be frustrated at every point. It is useless to bemoan this, for it is the fact. The claim operates whether you like it or not, and you must handle it, or it will handle you. It should be remembered that evil further uses this law of reversal to turn one back to material belief in all things, and so to turn one away from discerning evil as pure mental iniquity. Thinking of evil as material is to hide its real nature. It is thus evil hopes to make its lie continuous. Laws of material belief are looked upon as continuing laws, and the beliefs resulting from them as continuous beliefs, until they ultimate in what is called natural death. Therefore, the purpose of evil is to make its suggestions operate as old, diseased beliefs. If it succeeds in making its victim believe his trouble is material, it has forestalled its hypnotic influence being discerned and thus destroyed. Do not be deceived into thinking that it is ever natural for you not to have all good. Good is man's natural heritage and being. Your every desire is already satisfied by divine mind, for you do not originate it. That desire is of mind. Then, It is the false sense of the law of reversal that is stopping the fulfillment of your dearest hopes. Even your good deeds are reversed in belief by the spurious law of evil. It must never be forgotten that the suppositional law of reversal is the opposite of the actual law of reversal, which is continually and unceasingly operating to reverse everything that comes to you as suggestion and to put it in its true place as the presence of God. The latter law is obviously the law of progress, because it brings you eventually to the point of seeing God as all in all. The law of reversal, as the weapon of evil, is the suppositional opposite of the law of progress. Knowing this, it should not be difficult to rise to the realization that you are a law unto yourself, and to refuse to allow malicious mental malpraxis to harm you under any circumstances, either when asleep or when awake, as Mrs. Eddy phrases it. Since the reverse of a lie is the truth, you can utilize this law of reversal so that every argument of evil to harm you will become a blessing, because you know that the law of reversal operates to that very end. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, Isaiah said. Why? Because the law of reversal is God's law, whereby God is the spontaneous law of reversal to everything unlike himself, to all evil. How does malicious mind operate? To have a complete sense of freedom, it is essential for the Christian Scientist to understand that malicious mind has no possible way of bringing evil directly to pass. Malicious mind cannot operate directly to bring about either sin, sickness, death, limitation, or any condition. It is self-evident malicious mind, the one erroneous malpractitioner, cannot argue with such lies because it knows they are lies and that you are neither sinful, sick, dead, nor limited. Or the malpractitioner would not be trying to bring these conditions about. There could then be no conviction in the mind of the malicious arguer that what it is arguing is true, and without conviction, there could be no result. So, it becomes essential for the accomplishment of this purpose for the malpractitioner first to find an innocent channel through whom it can operate, and then to make that channel believe that the lies it is stating about another are true. If it can do this, it has obtained an honest conviction and started a malicious attack, for honest conviction carries with it mind power and the possibility of accomplishment. How does evil do this? By both silent and audible argument, it convinces the one it is endeavoring to use as its channel that its intended victim is sick, dying, poverty-stricken, intemperate, hateful, discouraged, or any of the things it is intent upon producing. If it succeeds, it has started an honest conviction of the reality of these lies about its victim, and there ensues active, malicious mental malpractice, which, if accepted, finally destroys the victim. Mrs. Eddy brings this out in her article, Mental Practice in Miscellaneous Writings, where she says that if people believe that a man is sick and knows it, and speak of him as being sick, put into the minds of others that he is sick, publish it in the newspapers that he is failing, and persist in this action of mind over mind, it follows that he will believe that he is sick. And Jesus said it would be according to the woman's belief. But if, with the certainty of science, he knows that an error of belief has not the power of truth and cannot, does not, produce the slightest effect, it has no power over him. Does not this show how evil works by the action of mind over mind? but in order to get results, there must always be conviction on the part of the thinker, for conviction is the mind quality that operates in the realm of mentality. Arguments do not operate unless accompanied by conviction. As Science and Health declares, be thoroughly persuaded in your own mind concerning the truth which you think or speak, and you will be the victor. In this way, you see how you can become your own mental malpractitioner by applying to yourself the arguments of evil hypnotically suggested to you. You can operate as this innocent victim just as effectively as can another if you accept the lies of the malpractitioner. If you do not refute these lies, but accept them as reality, you will malpractice on yourself until you eventually become powerless to break the mesmerism confronting you. Are you going to tolerate such irrationality? Of course not. Then reject each lie with the truth you know about yourself, the self of you, until you no longer listen either complacently or fearfully to anything that does not emanate from God, the one cause. Denounce evil in all its ways, and especially as hypnotic suggestion. You cannot afford to be gentle in your denunciation of malicious animal magnetism. It is a deadly mental poison, and if not guarded against, neutralized, and destroyed by translation back to God, will accomplish its purpose of destroying you. Evil to the Christian Scientist is not an intelligent devil going around like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour, but is simply the suppositional opposite of his own understanding of divine mind. Thus, as Paul put it, and as the Christian Scientist understands it, he can never be tempted beyond what he is able, for he has only to apply what he knows of God to find his way of escape, that he may be able to bear it and rise triumphant from the experience. It is only lack of understanding that makes a Christian Scientist afraid of malicious mental malpractice. It should be evident to the merest novice in Christian Science that there could be no suppositional opposite to what he does not know. Thus it is his knowing alone that he is called upon to defend. Evil does not operate as something over there, outside of one's own mentality. It always operates as the negative of what one knows. It is this negation that the Christian Scientist must guard against, and not an imaginary foe seeking to destroy him. Understanding evil is but the negation of the truth he knows, makes him master of every situation. Therefore, constant watchfulness is necessary to be true to what one knows. The Christian Scientist instinctively knows it is easier to heal a lie of malicious mind operating as a law of hypnotic suggestion than to heal a lie of the same malicious mind operating as a natural law. This is on the same basis that an acute claim seems easier to meet than a chronic claim. This is also the reason why malicious argument invariably takes the form of a natural appearance suggesting the working of a law of nature or matter or heredity or something of that sort, thus making the deception complete. This tends to confuse the earnest scientist by again presenting that which he had felt had been destroyed as a belief of a law of relapse. Thus, the deviltry of evil appears as a normal or natural claim of matter. The Christian Scientist must understand that he should be willing to meet, under the rule of malicious mental malpractice, every lie of belief that he formerly had to meet under the rule of materiality in its simpler forms of matter. Jesus said, "First the blade, then the ear, after that the full corn in the ear." The blade contains all that the full corn in the ear contains, but it is less developed. This can be applied to the solving of the various phenomena of malicious mind appearing as simple materiality. The blade has little of evil visible. Nevertheless, the whole of evil is there and eventually emerges when malicious mental malpractice, the full corn in the ear, is revealed in all its depravity, stripped of every appearance of good. As Mrs. Eddy asked in Retrospection and Introspection, "Art thou still unacquainted with thyself? Then be introduced to this self. Know thyself," as said the classic Grecian motto. "Note well the falsity of this mortal self. Behold its vileness, and remember this poverty-stricken stranger that is within thy gates. Then be willing to meet every phase of evil as malicious suggestion, just as in the beginning of your career as a Christian Scientist, you were eager to meet every claim of matter. If you remain wide awake and rejoice in crossing swords with this final phase of evil as pure malicious suggestion, you will enjoy your journey from sense to soul. You will never murmur or be discouraged, but will be filled with new hope and assurance that what you know of divine mind and its operations is sufficient to meet and destroy every lie of evil. Jesus said, "There is nothing hidden that shall not be revealed." He meant this in a way we have yet to learn. The Christian Scientist realizes and declares in his treatment, "I know all that I need to know about this case, and I know it immediately." Why? Because God, being the one intelligence, knows all things, and therefore there is nothing hidden from infinite intelligence, nor from that which shows God forth. It would be useless for God to know something unless his man knew it also. Otherwise, God would have no way of expressing his knowing. Hence, the practitioner of God declares, "I do know all that I need to know about this case," and he acts accordingly. It is the same in the case of malicious sin as in sickness. The practitioner must know about that, all that he needs to know, and he must and does know it instantly. It is the part of wisdom to keep every channel open for information. You have a right to know all that is going on about you. You do not delve into error, but you keep your avenues of intelligence open, so all that you should know, you do know at exactly the right time. In other words, as Mrs. Eddy says in Miscellaneous Writings, "Let us open our affections to the principle that moves all in harmony, from the falling of a sparrow to the rolling of a world." Nothing is either too insignificant or too important for you to know if it is right for you to know it, and you cannot know it if it is not right. You must realize this, for evil's suggestion is quite as likely to fill you with a lot of unnecessary trash as to stop you from knowing that which you should know. Be on your guard. One thing especially every Christian Scientist should know and must know from what has been established, and that is how easily he can become an innocent tool of malicious mental malpractice by passing around idle chatter about persons, places, or things. Believing what is said to be true does not free one from being the tool of malicious mental malpractice and, therefore, from being about the devil's business. There is only one way to be sure of not being the tool of evil, and that is by basing all that is said on God as the one cause, always starting from God, and beholding all effect as the emanation of God.